Well, our lights are warming up. Warming up seems to be the theme of the day. And we're going to be collecting the offering in just a couple of moments. We'll give you a chance to be able to see, to get prepared for what you need to do. But really, really good to have you here today. Glad you braved the elements to come on out and share time together. You know, I did a post last night on the church Facebook page just to basically say when it comes to us closing, basically the way it would work is if the police said you can't drive, we would obey the law, okay? But as long as the police say it's okay to drive, we're going to go ahead and drive, and we're going to be here. So some of you say, well, you know, you're from Buffalo. Of course, that's why you do that. And Buffalo was actually not a very cold place. It was just a very snowy place. We didn't get this frigid stuff all the time, but we sure got a fair share of snow. So our servers are going to come right now and start collecting the offering. Let me walk you through a number of things this morning. First of all, you normally at 8 o'clock every week receive your copy of the links. And this week, unfortunately, Constant Contact's been down the last couple of days. I don't know why. So we weren't able to send you a fresh one. But as soon as it's back up, we will send that out because I know some of you depend on that for your Old Testament reading and other things that are posted there. So as soon as that's back and active, we will make sure that's there in your hands. There are two things that are going to be in that I really want you to be able to take advantage of. One is I want you, after we're done with our study today, to go back and watch the link to the video from the Bible Project to the Book of Ruth, the talk they do on the Book of Ruth. I think it'll really reinforce what we're talking about today. The other thing is we're going to be offering an opportunity in the near future for baptisms on a Sunday morning during church. So what we're going to do is actually kind of relocate some of our high schoolers, and we'll have the pool right here in front of us. And that'll be February 24th and March 3rd. Both services, those opportunities will be there. So if you've been looking to get baptized, there will be a link in the links that you can go ahead and click. And the other thing is if you know, the tech thing doesn't work for you, you can go back and talk to the people at the welcome desk at the end of the service, and they'd be glad to go ahead and take down your information as well. So we have our annual meeting tonight at 4 o'clock, this afternoon at 4 o'clock, and hopefully you come back for that. It's a time to be able to just talk through the business of the church, how things are going, what the past year was like, what we look forward to in the coming year. You, of course, have the women's retreat registration coming up. Giving statements were a little bit different this year. We didn't have to mail them out. It's nice you all received a link. If you still want that mailed paper copy, let us know, and we'll make sure to get that to you. And the program that we used actually did make a change after everything was done, and now we're able to link the giving statement. So some of you got a giving statement under one name or another name. We're able to do that. So if that's important to you, you can contact Tristy, there's an announcement there for you to do that, and we can go ahead and get you a combined statement if that matters to you. So my front row is quite empty. They're all off playing in the snow. I tell you what, I feel lonely up here. It's just not right. But the images I've seen coming back from Lake Geneva have been a lot of fun. It's been really neat to see that they're finally at an Arctic blast, and it truly is an Arctic blast. In the past, it was more like a monster mudslide. So they're actually sledding and just doing all the things that you're supposed to do when you go off to snow camp. So I know they're having a great time. They'll be back this afternoon. There's no group for the high schoolers tonight. And then our junior hires will go next week. Same drill. I did look at the weather, and it looks like it's going to be more moderate, like, you know, 25-ish. So the way life should be. And then there will be high school next week, even though the junior hires are returning. So I need to walk over here and get my stack of stuff. And as I do, Nate was home not too long ago, and he was talking about a class he took this year. He took auditing. And my understanding is auditing is dreadful. Personally, I don't even like to count, so it's dreadful for me no matter what. But really hard class, miserable time. I just had a very, very hard time in this class. Called a lot of times very, very upset about auditing. And when we got a chance to talk while we're live together, face to face, I said, so tell me what's hard about it. I know the numbers are hard about, but what's hard about it? He said, this professor has a habit that he'll just call on you in class, and you have to be ready to answer. You just have to be ready to go. And so, you know, it's hard because for one thing, he doesn't like speaking in front of other people, and you're being called on to go ahead and give the right answer in front of everybody. And I'm not kidding. All of a sudden, it was like I was on a TV show and I could feel myself going, vroom, and I tunneled back to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, 1988, sitting in Hebrew exegesis with a professor named Dennis McGarry. They nicknamed him Mad Dog McGarry. And I tell you what, this guy, he was brilliant. He was so smart, his head kind of tilted. You know, one of those guys. But his habit was to call on people in class. And you got to understand what we did in that particular class. You were given a Hebrew Bible, and you got to translate what was sitting there in the Hebrew Bible. And then you got to identify all the words for what they were. And he could call on you and say, here's what I want you to do. I want you to read it in Hebrew. I want you to translate it into English. And then I wanted you to tell me about the significant words in that text. I went into that class almost every week wanting to throw up. I mean, I did not like being called on the spot. I love listening. I love learning. I hated being called on in that class. I mean, to this day, my hands shake a little bit when I think about that particular class. But what we did do in that class, for the 15 weeks that we were together, we broke down the book of Ruth. We just studied the book of Ruth, went through, and it's funny, I told Kim, I pulled out my Ruth folder from that class, and I open it up, I'm starting to look at it, and I'm like, look at all the things I used to know. This is amazing. I used to be smart. Look what I did here. I can't read one of these words now. This is crazy. It was amazing what I used to know. But I do remember a few things. And one of the things I remember distinctly is that I love the book of Ruth. I love the story found in these four chapters in the Bible. There are some unusual practices in this book that I think we need to talk about in order to understand the book a little bit better and in order for you to fall in love with it as well. So we're going to take a very different approach this morning. You're not going to have, all you have up here is the chart of the book of Ruth, which most of you can't read anyway. You can see Ruth, so that's very good. But outside of that, you're going, yeah, pictures. Anyway, what we're going to do, I want to actually read the chapter, and then we're just going to go through and talk about pieces that are in there. And then we're going to read another chapter. So we're going to hear the story today. I want you to hear it. Because I'll tell you what, Ruth is a beautifully written story. It's not just a beautiful story. It's a beautifully written story. This story is composed just in an incredible way. And in fact, if you watch that video later, they'll get into just some of the beauty of the composition of the book. So, starting with verse 1 of chapter 1, we read, in the days when the judges ruled in Israel. By the way, here's what I want you to do. I want you to listen to this through a filter. So for one, listen to it through a Jewish filter, okay? Listen to it as if you have no idea that Jesus is here. He's come. You're just listening to it as a Jew in those times. The other way I do want you to listen to it is as a Christian. So I hope you can do it both at the same time. Because there's so much anticipation that goes on in this book. You'll hear a word and you'll go, huh? Because one of the things we have to ask is, why in the world does this book show up here now? Why these four chapters in the middle, sandwiched between the book of Judges and 1 Samuel? Sandwiched between a time when Israel had no king and everybody did what was right in their own eyes, and the first and second king of Israel. Why is it here? In the days when the judges ruled Israel, a man from Bethlehem in Judah left the country because of a severe famine. He took his wife and two sons, and they went to live in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. Their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephratites from Bethlehem in the land of Judah. During their stay in Moab, Elimelech died, and Naomi was left with her two sons. The two sons married Moabite women. One married a woman named Orpah, and the other married a woman named Ruth. But about a decade later, 10 years later, both Mahlon and Chilion died. This left Naomi alone without her husband or her sons. Then Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had blessed his people in Judah by giving them good crops again. So Naomi and her daughters-in-law got ready to leave Moab to return to their homeland. With her two daughters-in-law, she set out from the place where they had been living and took the road that would lead back to Judah. Now on the way, Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back to your mother's homes instead of coming with me. And may the Lord reward you for your kindness to your husbands and to me. May the Lord bless you with the security of another marriage." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they all broke down and wept. "No, no, we want to go with you. We want to go be with your people." But Naomi replied, "Why should you go with me? Can I still give birth to other sons who will grow up to be your husbands? No, my daughters, return to your parents' home, for I am too old to marry again. And even if it were possible and I were to marry tonight and bear sons, then what? Would you wait for them to grow up and refuse not to marry someone else? No, of course not, my daughters. Things are far too bitter for me than for you, because the Lord himself has caused me to suffer." And again, they wept together, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. But Ruth insisted on staying with Naomi. "See," Naomi said, "your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. You should do the same." But Ruth replied, "Don't ask me to leave you again or to turn back. I will go wherever you go, and I will live wherever you live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. I will die where you die, and will be buried there. May the Lord punish me severely if I allow anything but death to separate us." So when Naomi saw that Ruth had made up her mind to go with her, she stopped urging her. The two of them continued on their journey. When they came to Bethlehem, the entire town was stirred by their arrival. "Is it really Naomi?" the women asked. "Don't call me Naomi. Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me home empty. Why should you call me Naomi when the Lord has caused me to suffer and the Almighty has sent such tragedy?" So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by her daughter-in-law Ruth, the young Moabite woman. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Go back to the beginning of chapter 1. So first of all, we know that this happens in the time that the judges are ruling the land. We just finished Judges. Pretty hideous book, right? I mean, it's the Bible. I'm not saying hideous in terms of it's bad, but there's a lot of bad stuff going on in there. There's a lot of bad stuff going on in there because the people refuse to accept God as their king. They want something other than God as their ruler. And so God keeps sending these judges who bring them out of captivity and bring them out of captivity. This is during one of those seasons of captivity. Most scholars believe that Ruth and Naomi, that this story probably happens during the judgeship of Gideon, just based on the timing and the events found in the book. They live in Bethlehem. Now, whether you're a Jew or a Christian, you go, "Bethlehem, Bethlehem. Why are we reading a story about someone from Bethlehem?" And then even further, what do we hear? They're Ephrathites. Bethlehem, oh, Bethlehem, from the land of Judah, are you not the least of these? And it talks about Bethlehem Ephratah in Micah 5:2. So, I mean, we're reading this and we're going, okay, this is going to have some connection to Jesus. First couple of verses, we're going, this is going to have some connection to Jesus. They leave because of a famine. How many times in the Bible do we see someone driven from their homeland because of tragedy, because of persecution, because of a famine, and they go? And we're left to wonder, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Are they running away from God, or are they going to a good place? It would be easy to look at this and judge and say, well, based on the deaths, they did the wrong thing. But when we read the rest of the story, we might find out that this was actually quite a wonderful thing. So they go to Moab. And while in Moab, the sons marry Moabite women. Now we know the Bible is, the law said you're supposed to marry a Jewish woman if you're a Jew. Marrying a Moabite woman. And it's funny because someone reading this might go, huh, a Moabite. in the time that Israel had no king and everybody did what was right in their own eyes. This is what I love, that in the time that Israel had no king and everybody did what was right in their own eyes, we are going to learn from someone who is not a Jew what it means to be faithful, what it means to be a total, true follower of God. It's absolutely beautiful the way God brings this story together. We know from that season of life that when a man died, the inheritance passed through the male. And so now, as a widow, Naomi finds herself in a spot because she no longer has these property rights. And on top of that, now her sons are gone. So her entire family is cut off from the property, from the things that they own. There's a real desperation here. It's not totally without cause for her to say, I'm empty. I have nothing. I don't have my husband. I don't have my children. I have no rights in this world. I just have to depend upon the generosity of people around me. The daughters-in-law walk with her for a little while. We know that to be the case. And as we read along, we find that she refers to the great kindness that they've shown her. It says verse 8, go back to your mother's home. By the way, that's interesting in itself, isn't it? Go back to your mother's home. Normally in the Bible, you hear a reference to the father's home. Why the mother's home? Lots of theories on that. Some believe that the mom would have been more compassionate toward a woman who had lost her husband. Others believe that because this was probably a polygamous relationship, she would actually more identify with her mother within that particular family. On top of that, as you read the book, you just find women are very central to this entire book. Go back to your mother's home instead of coming with me, and may the Lord reward you for your kindness to your husbands and to me. Now, kindness, this is the word in the book. It's the word chesed. If you want to get all Jewish about it, chesed. Get a little stuff going there. Chesed. But chesed. And chesed isn't just being kind. In fact, chesed isn't just being loving. Chesed is loving kindness. It's the two smashed together. It's the kind of kindness you show someone because you just genuinely, completely, selflessly love them. You just love them and you can't help but be kind. One commentator said, it is difficult to describe chesed. You just have to see it to know it. You have to watch it in action. And I really believe it's part of the reason God gave us this book, so that we could see chesed in action, so we could see someone who should righteously say, I need to go find another husband and start all over. And what does she say instead? I am going to stay with you until you die or I die. I will not leave you alone. I will not leave you alone. I refuse to. She shows such tremendous loving kindness toward Naomi, who, let's face it, is not in the best of state right now. I don't know that Naomi's the best of company, right? It would probably be kind of easy to say, okay, you have a great life. I'm on my way. But she just gives and gives and gives of herself. So they arrive back in town. We know about the names. We know that she goes from a name that means pleasant to a name that means bitter. She refers to herself as being full, having been full when she left, and now she comes back empty. Come to chapter 2. Now, there was a wealthy and influential man in Bethlehem named Boaz. Wealthy and influential, I don't think really helps. It's more like he's noble. Right off the bat, we're hearing this. There's yet another person in Israel. Israel had no king, and everybody did what was right in their own eyes, except Ruth. Ruth did what was right, except Boaz. Boaz did what was right. Right off the start, we know this is a noble man. Wealthy and influential, a noble man in Bethlehem named Boaz, who was a relative of Naomi's husband, Elimelech. One day, Ruth said to Naomi, let me go out into the fields to gather leftovers behind anyone who will let me do it. Now, this is just kind of wild, right? We read this. We read this idea that a poor person, that a foreigner could go out into a field and collect what was left. A righteous farmer would have said, I don't have to pick every last piece. I'll leave some behind So even in this, we see that Boaz is a noble man because he's obeying the law in a time that nobody was obeying the law. Naomi said, "All right, my daughter, go ahead." So Ruth went out to gather grain behind the harvesters. And as it happened, she found herself working in a field. I love that. "And as it happened," just so happened. Anyway, "and as it happened, she found herself working in a field that belongs to Boaz, the relative of her father-in-law Elimelech." Surprise, surprise. "While she was there, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. 'The Lord be with you.'" And they cry back, "The Lord bless you." Can you imagine every day at work, your boss comes in, "The Lord be with you." And they, "The Lord bless you." I mean, this is just a kind of a beautiful, fun thing, a great habit that they have going. "Then Boaz said to the foreman, 'Who is that girl over there?'" Now, right off the bat, we're kind of left wondering, what's Boaz thinking? Is this Boaz going, "Who is that?" or "Who is that?" Anyway, "Who is that girl over there?" The foreman said, "She is the young woman from Moab who came back with Naomi. She asked me this morning if she could gather grain behind the harvesters. She has been hardworking all day except for a few minutes when she took rest in the shelter." Boaz went over to Ruth and said, "Listen, my daughter, stay here with us when you gather grain. Don't go to any other fields. Stay right behind the women working in the field. See which part of the field they are harvesting and follow them. I have warned the young men not to bother you. They're going to stay away. You'll be safe," because she would not have been safe in most fields. "And when you are thirsty, help yourself to water then that you have drawn from the well." Ruth fell at his feet and thanked him warmly. "Why are you being so kind? Why are you being so hesed to me? I am only a foreigner." She says, "I don't deserve this. I'm not even a Jew." He says, "I know who you are. But I also know about the love and kindness. I know about the loving kindness. I know about the hesed that you have shown your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. I heard how you left your father and your mother in your own land to live here as a complete stranger. May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wing you have come to take refuge, reward you fully." Now, here's a little thing that starts to happen. I want you to keep listening for it. Everybody who extends a blessing becomes the blesser. The person who says, "May the Lord bless you," is ultimately the person who fulfills the blessing, which is pretty wild. I hope to continue to please you, sir. You have comforted me by speaking so kindly to me, even though I'm not as worthy as your workers." At lunchtime, Boaz called to her, "Come over here, help yourself to some food. You can dip your bread in the wine if you like." And she sat with the harvesters, and Boaz gave her food, more than she could eat, mounded her plate. When Ruth came back to work, Boaz ordered his young man, "Let her gather grain right among the sheaves." So now it's not what's dropped. It's let her go right to it. Go at it. "Don't stop her. Pull some of the heads out and the bundles. Drop them on purpose and leave them for her. Let her pick them up and don't give her a hard time." So Ruth gathered barley all day. And when she beat out the grain at evening, it came to about half a bushel. That's a lot of barley. She carried it back into town and showed it to her mother-in-law. Ruth also gave the food that was left over from her lunch. "So much," Naomi exclaimed. "Where did you gather grain today?" You got to go back there. "Where did you work? May the Lord bless the one who helped you." So Ruth told her mother-in-law about the man in the field she had worked with. And she said, "The man I worked with today is named Boaz. May the Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He is showing his loving kindness to us, as well as to your dead husband. That man is one of our closest relatives, one of our family redeemers." Then Ruth said, "What's more, Boaz even told me to come back and stay with the harvesters until the entire harvest is completed." This is wonderful. Remember, this is Naomi, bitter. "This is wonderful." She's getting excited. She sees good stuff. "Do as he said. Stay with his workers right through the whole harvest. You will be safe there, unlike in other fields." So Ruth worked alongside the women in Boaz's field and gathered grain with them until the end of the barley harvest. Then she worked with them through the wheat harvest too. But all the while, she lived with her mother-in-law. So here she meets this guy. He's just noble. He's caring. He's following and obeying the law. And we run into this little theme here that he's one of their family redeemers. So in those times, in order for the line of heredity to continue, in order to keep that property within the family, a close family member could come and marry that woman, and now the property would stay in the family. So Naomi is going, keep your eye on Boaz. Boaz could help us here. This could work out very well. This is a good man. Stay there. Just the way that God protects her. Again, she's a foreigner. She's someone other people would have been looking down on. And Boaz looks at her with loving kindness, in part in response to the loving kindness that he knows that she has shown to Naomi. And we just see this string throughout the book of a person extending loving kindness, and that loving kindness is received back with more loving kindness. Go to chapter 3. Now it gets a little interesting. One day, Naomi said to Ruth, "My daughter, it is time that I find a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for." Or in other words, we need to find you a good man. "Boaz is a close relative of ours. He's been very kind in letting you gather grain with his workers. Tonight he will be winnowing barley in the threshing floor. Now do as I tell you. Take a bath. Put on perfume, dress in your nicest clothes, state night. Then go to the threshing floor, and don't tell Boaz, don't let Boaz see you until he has finished his meal. Be sure to notice where he lies down. Then go over and uncover his feet and lie down at his feet. He will tell you what to do." These are not the instructions on Match.com, by the way. Okay, so he's going to be laying there sleeping. Go uncover his feet. "Okay, I'll do everything you say." So she went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions her mother-in-law gave her. After Boaz had finished his meal and was in good spirits, he lay down beside the heap of grain and went to sleep. Ruth crept over quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down by his feet. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up, turned over, and he was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet. I think most of us would be surprised. He asked, "Who are you?" Now, this is not an identity, "Who are you?" It's more like a, "What in the world are you doing at my feet, woman? This is crazy." So still blurry-eyed, she says, "I am your servant, Ruth. Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer." She gets right to the point. "Would you like to marry me?" That's what she's saying. "Would you marry me?" "The Lord bless you, my daughter," Boaz exclaimed. "You are showing more family loyalty." There's Hesed again. Part of Hesed is loyalty to someone. "You are showing more loyalty now than ever by not running after a younger man, whether rich or poor." Boaz is not a young guy. "Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter, for I will do everything necessary for everyone in town knows you are an honorable woman." Her reputation has spread. People may know she's from Moab, but I'll tell you what, she acts like the best of the Jews. There's one problem. "While it is true that I am one of your family redeemers, there's another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. And if he is willing to redeem you, then let him marry you. But if he is not willing, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will marry you. Now lie down here until morning." So Ruth lay at Boaz's feet until morning, but she got up before it was light enough for people to recognize her. For Boaz said, "No one must know that a woman was at the threshing floor tonight. He really cares about her character." Boaz also said, "Bring your coat, spread it out." What does he do? He gives her more barley. Scoops up 6 scoops of barley, puts it in the coat, because he wants something to go back to Naomi. Then Boaz returned home. When Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi said, "What happened, my daughter?" Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done. And she added, "He gave me 6 scoops of barley and said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed." Do you remember who thinks she's empty? Even in this, something is, I want to make sure she does not feel like she is empty, that she is empty-handed. Then Naomi said to her,
Just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has followed through on this. He will settle this today. He's a man of honor. He's a man of character. I want to show you one thing here. It's really interesting. So you go back to, it would be verse 9, that second part of verse 9 where it says, spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer. There's another way to read this. Covering could also be read as wing. It has that dual meaning. Now, remember just a little bit earlier, chapter 2, verse 12, what did he say to her? May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wing you have come to take refuge, fully reward you. I think she's coming back and say, remember that wing thing? You're the one. You're the one that's going to provide this covering for me. So it's not just about put your sheet over me. It's about would you literally bring me into your family? Would you be the one that provides for me and covers me? So certainly the tradition here is a bit strange, but the point is well made. She wants to marry him, and he recognizes that as an act of true, complete, total sacrifice, that she's willing to, she's doing this not for herself, she's doing this for Naomi. She's doing this because she cares so much about Naomi. It's absolutely beautiful. So let's go to the last chapter. It gets a little fun. So Boaz went to the town gate. That's where business happens. Not the Starbucks with Wi-Fi. You go to the town gate, took his seat. Then the family redeemer he had mentioned came by. By the way, we don't get his name. Boaz called out to him, come over here, friend. I want to talk to you. So they sat down together. Then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. You know, come here, sit down. By the way, here are my lawyers. Vroom. Oh, okay. He knows something official is coming. Then Boaz called these leaders from the town and asked them to sit down. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, you know Naomi, who came back from Moab. She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I felt I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. If you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away because I am next in line to redeem it for you. Isn't it funny that he starts with, he's a shrewd guy. He starts out by saying, there's this land available. Do you want it? Well, all right, I'll redeem it. Didn't know it was available. Thanks so much. Boaz says, of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. Now, there are a lot of people who are just flatly saying, ain't no way I'm marrying a Moabite. No way. That way, she can have children who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family. Do you hear what Boaz is saying? This matters. It matters that Naomi is provided for. He says, I can't redeem it. This might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land. I cannot keep it. We don't know why. Maybe it was because she was a Moabite, and that would endanger his property rights, but he says, I can't do it. Now, in those days, and I love this, the narrator will do this from time to time. He'll say, you don't live during the time this happened, so I got to explain something to you. In those days, there's a custom in Israel for anyone transferring a right of purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal, and he said to Boaz, you buy the land. Brian left me his truck this weekend. I've been able to drive around, and I really thought Jackson might like it. So, Jackson, you want Brian's truck? It's yours. Of course, we live in the land of America with laws and not in the time of the judges, so all you have is my stinky shoe. But anyway, which I should probably take back because my feet are bare and all. Thank you. And thanks for not throwing because it would have hit me. Yeah, what a weird habit. We don't sign on the dotted line. We just trade shoes. Here, have my sandal. That's what they did. Habits change. Then Boaz said to the leaders of the crowd standing around, you are witnesses today that I bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. And with the land, I have also acquired Ruth, the Moabite woman of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the family name of her dead husband and inherit the family property and the whole town here today is witness. Then the leader and all the people standing replied, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is now coming into your life, into your home like Rachel and Leah, from whom all the nations of Israel descended. May you be great in Ephrata and famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this woman who will be like those of our ancestor Perez, the son of Tamar in Judah." So Boaz married Ruth and took her into his home. They slept together, and the Lord enabled her to become pregnant, indicating that maybe prior she was not able to. She gave birth to a son, and the women of the town said to Naomi, "Praise the Lord who has given you a family redeemer today. May he be famous in Israel. May his child restore your youth and care for you in your own age, for he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you so much more. She's better than seven sons." Naomi took the baby in her arms. She cared for him as if he were her own. And then the neighbor women, get this, the neighbor women name him. Now at last, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. Without a trip to Moab, where are we? He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. In the time of Judges, Israel had no king, and everybody did what was right in their own eyes. Except some people. Some people said that just because the culture is scum, I don't have to be scum. Just because everything is a mess, I don't have to be a mess. Just because everybody else is unrighteous, I don't have to be unrighteous. I can follow God despite what everybody else. Though no one join me, still I will follow. And what happens? The woman who called herself empty is the great, great grandmother of David. Think about this. David tended sheep in the property inherited through her family. This is the family's property. This is David's home. She thought she was empty. She was more full than she could have ever dreamed. Perez became the father of Harzan. Harzan became the father of Ram. Ram became the father of Amminadab. Amminadab became the father of Nashon. Nashon became the father of Salmon. Salmon became the father of Boaz. Boaz became the father of Obed. Obed became the father of Jesse. Jesse became the father of David, and David became the father of Jesus. A woman from Moab, because she is willing to show loving kindness to a widow who has nothing, is ultimately in the lineage of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You never know where your kindness is going to take you. You just never know where your kindness is going to take you. And so this morning, as we move to communion, and we take that theme of looking up, I want you to think through this for a moment. Where in your life have you blessed someone ultimately to realize that God had asked you to be the blesser? Where in your life have you had such a moment of desperation that you would have declared yourself empty, only to find yourself in a better place than you could have ever dreamed? Where in your life have you shown loving kindness and your expression of loving kindness helped someone else to see what loving kindness looked like and they were loving and kind as well? Where in your life have you thought, though no one join me, still I will follow? I don't care what the culture is doing. I'm a follower of God. And even though the United States in 2018 has no Lord and everybody does what is right in their own eyes, I refuse.
I will obey God with my whole heart.
These are just a few of the lessons that we learn from this beautiful woman and from her story. Maybe one of them rings true for you today. So in the silence, I'd love for you to reflect on that. We'll come out of our time of reflection and look up to God by praying the prayer together. And then we'll go to one of the six stations around the room for the communion, two in the back, two to the sides, two gluten-free here on either side of the stage. Let's just be quiet for a few moments. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen. A half hour really doesn't give us enough time to do justice to this beautiful story. One other theme that I don't want you to miss. While the characters from time to time mention God, the narrator never does. There's never kind of this, you know, and God provided Ruth to take care of Naomi, or and God brought along Boaz to take care of the family. There's never a mentioning, and I love that about this because basically what it shows us is that very often God is at work. God is always at work. We don't necessarily know what he's doing behind the scenes, but he's at work, and he's looking for our faithful action along the way. His work is accomplished through our faithful action along the way. And so you have the melding the two together without the obvious, and Ruth obeyed God and did blah, 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 or whatever. So as you leave today, I hope that that'll give you some assurance that while the narrator of your story doesn't always point out exactly where the work of God is happening, the work of God is happening in your life. I hope that as you walk away from this day, you will take on the action of living out a life of loving kindness. Though our world is not kind, that does not mean that we should not be people who live in loving kindness. That while our world is dark, we do not have to be people of darkness. Ruth and Boaz should be incredible spiritual heroes to us. And they're sandwiched between a book where people are doing what they want and a next book where we're going to be introduced to yet another beautiful woman named Hannah who's desperate to have a child. And that child starts unfolding beautiful things in the story of Israel. Hannah next week, as well as Samuel, are going to teach us how to pray. We're going to learn what it's like to pray from a place of gut desperation, as well as to recognize the voice of God when in the night he calls out to us and we say, wait, what? What was that? So I hope we'll see you again next week. Enjoy the cold.